Roland with an amazed grin. Jake's expression was even simpler. It was adoration, pure and simple.
"Tell him," Jake breathed. "Walk it to him. Right."
"You better pay attention," Eddie agreed. "He really doesn't give much of a rat's ass, Blaine. They didn't call him the Mad Dog of Gilead for nothing."
After a long, long moment, Blaine asked, "Did they call you so, Roland, son of Stephen?" "It may have been so," Roland agreed, standing calmly on thin air above the sterile foothills. "What good are you to me if you won't tell me riddles?" Blaine asked. Now he sounded like a grumbling, sulky child who has been allowed to stay up too long past his usual bedtime.
"I didn't say we wouldn't," Roland said.
"No?" Blaine sounded bewildered. "I do not understand. Yet voice print analysis indicates rational discourse. Please explain."
"You said you wanted them right now," the gunslinger replied. "That was what I was refusing. Your eagerness has made you unseemly."
"I don't understand."
"It has made you rude. Do you understand that?"
There was a long, thoughtful silence. Then, "If what I said struck you as rude, I apologize."
"It is accepted, Blaine, but there is a larger problem."
"Explain." Blaine now sounded a bit unsure of himself, and Roland was not entirely surprised. It had been a long time since the computer had experienced any human responses other than ignorance, neglect, and superstitious subservience. If it had ever been exposed to simple human courage, it had been a long time ago.
"Close the carriage again, and I will."
Roland sat down, as if further argument and the prospect of immediate death was now unthinkable. Blaine did as he was asked. The walls filled with color, and the nightmare landscape below was once more blotted out. The blip on the route map was now blinking close to the dot which marked Candleton.
"All right," Roland said. "Rudeness is forgivable, Blaine. So I was taught in my youth, and the clay has dried in the shapes left by the artist's hand. But I was also taught that stupidity is not."
"How have I been stupid, Roland of Gilead?" Blaine's voice was soft and ominous. Susanna suddenly thought of a cat crouched outside a mouse hole, tail swishing back and forth, green eyes shining.
"We have something that you want," Roland said. "But the only reward you offer if we give it to you is death. That's very stupid."
There was a long, long pause as Blaine thought this over. Then, "What you say is true, Roland of Gilead, but the quality of your riddles is not proven. I will not reward you with your lives for bad riddles." Roland nodded.
"I understand, Blaine. Listen now and take understanding from me. I have told some of this to my friends already. When I was a boy, in the barony of Gilead, there were 7 fair days each year. Winter, wide earth, sowing, midsummer, full earth, reaping, and year's end. Riddling was an important part of every fair day, but it was the most important event of the fair of wide earth and that of full earth, for the riddles told were supposed to augur well or ill for the success of the crops."
"That is superstition with no basis at all in fact," Blaine said. "I find it annoying and upsetting."
"Of course it's superstition," Roland agreed. "But you might be surprised at how well the riddles foresaw the crops. For instance, riddle me this, Blaine. What is the difference between a grandmother and a granary?"
"That is very old and not very interesting," Blaine said, but he sounded happy to have something to solve just the same. "One is one's born kin, the other is one's corn bin. A riddle based on phonetic coincidence. Another of this type, one told on the level which contains the barony of New York, goes like this. What is the difference between a cat and a complex sentence?"
Jake spoke up. "Our English teacher told us that one just this year. A cat has claws at the end of its paws, and a complex sentence has a pause at the end of its claws."
"Yes," Blaine agreed, "a very silly old riddle."
"For once I agree with you, Blaine, old buddy," Eddie said.
"I would hear more of fair day riddling in Gilead, Roland, son of Stephen. I find it quite interesting."
At noon, on wide earth and full earth, somewhere between 16 and 30 Riddlers would gather in the Hall of the Grandfathers, which was opened for the event. Those were the only times of year when the common fold, merchants and farmers and ranchers and such, were allowed into the Hall of the Grandfathers, and on that day they all crowded in. The gunslinger's eyes were far away and dreamy. It was the expression Jake had seen on his face in that misty other life, when Roland had told him of how he and his friends Cuthbert and Jamie had once sneaked into the balcony of that same hall to watch some sort of ritual dance. Jake and Roland had been climbing into the mountains when Roland had told him of that time, close on the trail of Walter. "Martin sat next to my mother and father," Roland had said. "I knew them even from so high above. And once she and Martin danced slowly and revolvingly, and the others cleared the floor for them and clapped when it was over. But the gunslingers did not clap." Jake looked curiously at Roland, wondering again where this strange, distant man had come from, and why. "A great barrel was placed in the center of the floor," Roland went on, "and into this each Riddler would toss a handful of bark scrolls with riddles writ upon them. Many were old, riddles they had gotten from the elders, even from books in some cases, but many others were new, made up for the occasion. Three judges, one always a gunslinger, would pass on these when they were told aloud, and they were accepted only if the judges deemed them fair." "Yes, riddles must be fair," Blaine agreed. "So they riddled," the gunslinger said. A faint smile touched his mouth as he thought of those days, days when he had been the age of the bruised boy sitting across from him with a billy bumbler in his lap. "For hours on end they riddled. A line was formed down the center in the Hall of the Grandfathers. One's position in this line was determined by lot, and since it was much better to be at the end of the line than at its head, everyone hoped for a high number, although the winner had to answer at least one riddle correctly." "Of course." Each man or woman, for some of Gilead's best riddlers were women, approached the barrel, drew a riddle, and handed it to the master. The master would ask, and if the riddle was still unanswered after the sands in a 3-minute glass had run out, that contestant had to leave the line. "And was the same riddle asked of the next man in line?" "Yes." "So that man had extra time to think?" "Yes." "I see. It sounds pretty swell." Roland frowned. "Swell?"
"He means it sounds like fun," Susanna said quietly.
Roland shrugged. "It was fun for the onlookers, I suppose. But the contestants took it very seriously, and there were quite often arguments and fistfights after the contest was over and the prize had been awarded."
"What prize was that?"
"The largest goose in Barony. And year after year my teacher, Court, carried that goose home."
"He must have been a great riddler," Blaine said respectfully. "I wish he were here."
"That makes two of us," Roland thought. "Now I come to my proposal," Roland said.
"I will listen with great interest, Roland of Gilead."
"Let these next hours be our fair day. You will not riddle us, for you wish to hear new riddles, not tell some of those millions you must already know."
"Correct."
"We couldn't solve most of them anyway," Roland went on. "I'm sure you know riddles that would have stumped even Court had they been pulled out of the barrel." He was not sure of it at all, but the time to use the fist had passed, and the time for the open hand had come.
"Of course," Blaine agreed.
"I propose that instead of a goose, our lives shall be the prize," Roland said. "We will riddle you as we run, Blaine. If, when we come to Topeka, you have solved every one of our riddles, you may carry out your original plan and kill us. That is your goose. But if we stump you, if there is a riddle in either Jake's book or one of our heads which you don't know and can't answer, you must take us to Topeka and then free us to pursue our quest. That is our goose."
Silence.
"Do you understand?"
"Yes."
"Do you agree?"
More silence from Blaine the Mono.
Eddie sat stiffly with his arm around Susanna, looking up at the ceiling of the Barony coach. Susanna's left hand slipped across her belly, thinking of the secret which might be growing there. Jake stroked Oi's fur lightly, avoiding the bloody tangles where the bumbler had been stabbed. They waited while Blaine, the real Blaine, now far behind them, living his quasi-life beneath a city where all the inhabitants lay dead by his hand, considered Roland's proposal. "Yes," Blaine said at last, "I agree. If I solve all the riddles you ask me, I will take you with me to the place where the path ends in the clearing. If one of you tells a riddle I cannot solve, I will spare your lives and take you to Topeka, where you will leave the Mono and continue your quest for the Dark Tower. Have I understood the terms and limits of your proposal correctly, Roland, son of Stephen?"
"Yes."
"Very well, Roland of Gilead."
"Very well, Eddie of New York."
"Very well, Susanna of New York."
"Very well, Jake of New York."
"Very well, Oi of Midworld." Oi looked up briefly at the sound of his name.
"You are Kartet, one made from many."
"So am I. Whose Kartet is the stronger is something we must now prove." There was a moment of silence, broken only by the steady, hard throb of the slow-trans turbines, bearing them on across the wastelands, bearing them on toward Topeka, the place where Midworld ended and Endworld began.
"So," cried the voice of Blaine, "cast your nets, wanderers. Try me with your questions, and let the contest begin."
Author's note. The fourth volume in the Tale of the Dark Tower should appear, always assuming the continuation of constant writer's life and constant reader's interest, in the not-too-distant future. It's hard to be more exact than that. Finding the doors to Roland's world has never been easy for me, and it seems to take more and more whittling to make each successive key fit each successive lock. Nevertheless, if readers request a fourth volume, it will be provided, for I still am able to find Roland's world when I set my wits to it, and it still holds me in thrall, more in many ways than any of the other worlds I have wandered in my imagination. And like those mysterious slow-trans engines, this story seems to be picking up its own accelerating pace and rhythm. I am well aware that some readers of the Wastelands will be displeased that it has ended as it has, with so much unresolved. I am not terribly pleased to be leaving Roland and his companions in the not-so-tender care of Blaine the Mono myself. And although you are not obligated to believe me, I must nevertheless insist that I was as surprised by the conclusion to this third volume as some of my readers may be. Yet books which write themselves, as this one did for the most part, must also be allowed to end themselves. And I can only assure you, reader, that Roland and his band have come to one of the crucial border crossings in their story, and we must leave them here for a while at the customs station, answering questions and filling out forms. All of which is simply a metaphorical way of saying that it was over again for a while, and my heart was wise enough to stop me from trying to push ahead anyway. The course of the next volume is still murky, although I can assure you that the business of Blaine the Mono will be resolved, that we will all find out a good deal more about Roland's life as a young man, and that we will be reacquainted with both the TikTok man and that puzzling figure Walter, called the Wizard or the Ageless Stranger. It is with this terrible and enigmatic figure that Robert Browning begins his epic poem, Child Roland to the Dark Tower Came, writing of him, "My first thought was he lied in every word, that hoary cripple with malicious eye askance to watch the working of his lie on mine, and mouth scarce able to afford suppression of the glee that pursed and scored its edge at one more victim gained thereby. It is this malicious liar, this dark and powerful magician who holds the true key to Endworld and the Dark Tower, for those courageous enough to grasp it, and for those who are left." Bangor, Maine, March 5th, 1991.
The Wastelands, The Dark Tower, Book 3, was written by Stephen King and read by Frank Muller. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.